Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for your gold and silver coin needs. The Roger Sales will be our guest today, calling in from Argentina. We'll get to Roger shortly. In the meantime, here's the market report. Gold is down $10.40. to $1,243.20 an ounce. Silver is down 29 cents to $19.46 per ounce. Platinum is off $10 to $1,371 an ounce. And palladium is flat at $689 per ounce. Over in the equities market, Dow Jones is down 37 points. 14,934. NASDAQ is off 0.45 triviality to 3434, basically the same as it was yesterday. New York Stock Exchange is off 48 points to 9,120. U.S. dollar index is up 0.54 to 83.53. And crude oil is up $1.39 a barrel to 99.38. That's interesting. We're sitting on the edge of $100 a barrel. We've been down in the low 90s for some time. We have now come up to $99.38 per barrel. Interesting. I'm looking at the exchange rates for the Canadian dollar, Australian dollar, euro, renminbi, yen, rupee, Mexican, relative to the U.S. dollar. All of those are down, which is a reflection that the dollar is up in terms of the dollar is being priced more highly right now, but based on the U.S. dollar index. And it seems improbable that that can be the truth of the matter. If it is true, what does it point to for the entire world? I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 major currencies, and they're all down relative to the dollar. They're also fiat currencies. What does that tell us for the world? It might tell us that the dollar is up. What does it tell us for the world? It implies that the whole world, if the currencies of the whole world are increasingly devalued, it suggests that the whole world is certainly subject to some sort of inflation. Maybe it's going into a global depression. There are a number of ways to interpret it, and maybe it's just an anomaly where we just see all of the other currencies are down today while the dollar is up. It's no big thing, perhaps. But it still suggests that however much trouble we have in the United States, there might be even more trouble outside the United States, which is a little bit hard to imagine. Roger, how are you doing?
Man, I don't know if I could get any better, Al. Honestly, if I got any better, I don't know if I could stand it.
Well, Roger, you're not married, are you?
No.
See, if you had a wife, she'd be able to tell you how you could get better. This is what happens when you live the single life, Roger. You don't have anyone there to correct you and show you the error of your ways, and you get to thinking, boy, I'm doing pretty good.
Thank goodness. Al, I wanted to ask you. You introduced me as a guest today. Now, last week I was a foreign correspondent. Sometimes you call me a guest host. Is this just a whim? Is it depending on the day, the Tuesday, and how you feel, or what?
Yeah, it has a lot to do with whether July doesn't have an R in it.
I see. Okay.
Well, see, that's what this is going on. If it was a month, well, neither does June. But see, June also doesn't have an L in it. So it depends on the letters in the month. It's kind of like an oyster, you know?
Okay, well, now that it makes sense to me. Listen, you were a second on this. Put all seriousness aside here. Last week, as we were closing up the program, I think it was last week, I made a comment. We didn't have a lot of time to get into it about China's debt to GDP being 200%. And you have to understand that figure is significant, because they don't have a long-term social program for those people over there. When you look at the U.S.'s debt, and you're talking $200 trillion or whatever off books and stuff, you're looking at all of the Medicare, all the Social Security, all the long-term stuff they're looking at in the future. This 200% GDP to debt ratio in China is debt, man. It's the bubble. You got that sitting there. You got Japan printing bonds like it's going out of style. You got all of this Jeff Snowden stuff having everybody with knives at each other's throats. I mean, it is a really interesting situation, my friend.
Well, you're talking globally. We are. I use the analogy on a regular basis. I don't know how many people remember this. It's, you know, the mature people will remember this. Those of you who are less mature, that is to say not as old, you might not recall, but there was a Memorex commercial that might go back into the, who knows, maybe the 70s. And it just sticks in my mind. And they'd have someone like Ella Fitzgerald hitting high C. And you would see the sound from her voice coming through the speaker, the Memorex system, and there'd be a wine glass sitting there, and it'd start to vibrate, and all of a sudden, bam, it'd just shatter. And the question was, it live or Memorex? And the point I'm just making is the entire globe reminds me of that wine glass. It hasn't shattered, but it is vibrating.
She's shaking, buddy. She's shaking.
Yeah, I understand. That's what appears, and I don't see any relief from that right now.
Well, let me tell you a couple of interesting things I saw over the weekend. These are the subtle things. You know, you're talking about old and all that stuff. We're not old, Al. We're seasoned, okay?
We had somebody else on the program that was 15, 20 years younger, said, no, you're old.
Hush, man, we're seasoned, all right? And part of that seasoning comes, and there's a sprinkle, well, hopefully more than a sprinkle, of wisdom in there. And when you kind of get those ingredients and your viewpoint shifts a little bit, and you start, you know why they pay the diamond cutter, right? Somebody told me this one time, Al. The diamond cutter, you know why he makes so much money? Because he knows just where to hold that chisel and just how to hit that thing, okay?
Yeah, I understand.
And when you get something in a perspective where you know just what chisel to put on it and just how hard to hit it, and you get that wisdom, see? And I'm reading this article over on 321 Gold over the weekend, Saturday or Sunday. It's a guy I like named Shun. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah.
I think his name is Daryl Shun.
Yeah, that's
he's
it.
He's a pretty sharp. He's very
absolutely
very spiritually based. Is he Oriental or is he Indian? Because it looks like to me he's got a ponytail back there. But his logic and his points are cogent. And he wrote this great little article over on 321 Gold. It's not on the front page. It's in the other back there. It's called "The Fed's Forked Tongue," and it's a very good article as he's apt to write. And he's got a couple of graphs in here which really startled me. One of them, two of them actually, are from and it references them in the links in the article, to a Ambrose Evans Pritchard article written, and there's two charts in there, and one of them is the velocity of money, and the other is consumer demand. And you don't have to click on the charts to see them suckers are headed straight down like that first turn of a roller coaster. Okay.
Yep.
But just a little bit further down was the one that really got my attention. And I wanted to talk about it today because I think we have experienced something that we've all waited for many years. All right. And the chart that's right below that is titled Gold Largest Four Net Position. And what it is the bullion bank's positions on whether they're short or long.
Yeah.
Okay, and for the first time, it only goes back to 2006. I believe this would go on back to around 2001, if not further. It's the first time that the bullion banks have gone long. Which means that this knocking down of the price was for them to cover the paper shorts that they'd been using to keep the price down. Then they could recoup their losses and not suffer equally or worse losses, and now they've turned the horse. And the point of that is, I bet you're going to see the spigot open now.
I think you're right. And the important point is, at least my understanding is that the principal means of knocking the price of paper gold down, and the world has largely allowed the fall in paper gold to determine the price of physical gold. In fact, there's a disconnect on these. These are not the same things, but they've knocked the price of paper gold down on the markets, and that's the price we reported today. You know, we gave you a price, $12.50, whatever it was. That's the price of paper gold.
Okay.
It's not the price of physical gold, although the assumption remains in the public's mind and the world's mind that the price of paper gold and the price of physical gold are synonymous, but it's not true. But here's where I'm going with this. The means of reducing the price of paper gold has been primarily by shorting paper gold. That's how they knocked it down. If they've shifted from a point where they are predominantly short, the bullion banks are predominantly short on paper gold. If they've shifted from paper shortage from shorts to longs, it implies that they are no longer able or inclined to suppress the price of paper gold as they have over the past 20 months.
Well, or that they've decided that it's time for them to go ahead and reverse the thing and let this go to whatever next part of the play we're about to walk into with the vibrating glass. Okay, I mean it's a seminal moment, and I follow this stuff real closely, the financial stuff. Okay, I have for years, and I'll tell you something else for those of you who are looking for the opportunists. You know, luck, I once heard luck described, you know, that coach speak stuff, Al, that you hear? And I once heard somebody said it was on the door of a coach's office and said, luck when preparation meets opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I understand.
And that's where we are. And those people that are prepared and that have, you know, like the little old chubby squirrels put some nuts back for the long, cold winter and stuff. And
yep.
You start dragging some of those out here in the next, keep a pulse on it. We'll talk about it a bunch, Al and I will, on select junior mining companies. And the reason I say that, I've been very intrigued with that for about 20 years, because very early on, and we've talked about this before, if you look back, where do we look? Historically to the 30s, and they confiscated gold at 20 and revalued it at 32 and gave themselves a little bit of a raise. Well, in that same period of time in the 30s, the number one mining stock in the United States, which is still listed on the exchange to this very day, is called Homestead Mining. Mm-hmm. And Homestead Mining shares went from $30 a share to $650.
Well, the mining shares have been down tremendously. They've suffered. I mean, price of gold is down in the last 20 months. But the price of mining shares has been terrible. It makes gold look like, like a helium balloon floating up, and the price of mining shares have been badly down. It follows that they're due also.
Well, what the wise old Jewish merchant told me when I was in college selling clothes for him?
Nope.
He said, you don't make money when you sell. You make money when you buy.
Probably right. I've told the same thing on the program. The trick, we harp on this to some degree. The essence of making a profit is you buy low and sell high. Right? That's always the idea. And what that necessarily means is if you're going to buy low, the reason the price is low is because no one else wants it. And if you're going to sell high, it's because it's at a time when everyone else wants whatever that product is. To make a profit, you have to be a contrarian. When everybody's selling, that's the time to buy. When the price is low and nobody says, get away from that, that's no good, that's the time to buy. When the price is high and everybody's screaming for it, that's the time to sell.
That's the famous Jesse Livermore, thing when he's going to work that day and the shoeshine boy gave him a tip on his way to the office and he went in and sold everything he had. It's so appropriate.
A little bit of truth to that. That can be funny and it can also be a certain amount of truth. If everybody says, now's the time to buy, that's probably a good time to sell. If everybody's saying, don't touch that, it's terrible, it's a complete loser, it might not be a bad idea. Now, you have to do your homework, though. You can't buy every piece of junk that comes down the pipe and everybody says, this is worthless stock. And you say, well, I don't know. The price, maybe it's time to buy, who was it? Enron. A lot of people, this is not the time to buy Enron. You understand? The contrarian philosophy requires, just as your Jewish merchant explained to you, you make money when you buy, all right? Not when you sell. And that means you got to do your homework. One, you're looking for a heck of a deal, but two, you are not looking to buy something in a store that's about to burst into flame. All right?
Let's hope not.
You got to do your research down there when you make that buy. But if you can buy properly when everyone else is selling a product that has to go up, you're in good shape.
Let me tell you something I picked up on some of this reading that I like to do, Zero Hedge and all these little nooks, and go over there and read these little articles. And what they evidently, the big players, as they were driving this price down in SLV and GLD, then the big players were able to come in and redeem. They set it up where they could come in and redeem in metal. And they'd turn the metal over to them, and then they'd take any monies they got from doing that, if it was short selling or whatever. And in one specific reference, because it has to be publicly disclosed, George Soros took a whole bunch of that money, $40, $50 million, and went over there to the Vancouver Junior Metals Exchange and bought the index fund. That was in the last month, a couple months.
Well, what do you think that means?
Well, it tells me that when you follow the smart money, that's what it. I see the bullion banks turn long for the first time in memory. I see them cleaning out the metals on the paper gold and taking the profits and their other money and investing it in some of these index funds. Because you're right, and the junior miners may get hit for another 12 or 18 months, but at some point in this cycle, you're going to find some real jewels out there.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it may be that you can find them right now, but you're going to have to hold them for a while. There's one of the problems with it, trying to understand those junior mining shares. Every one of them are to some degree, or I won't say every one, but a lot of them are precarious. They have perhaps great potential, but they also have great vulnerability. And which ones, trying to sort among them, it's like the NFL draft or something like that. You know, there's a lot of potential players, but who are really good? No. But which ones are going to have a real impact? No. You got to be lucky or very smart to make those decisions. We'll talk a little more about what's happened to the price of gold when we return. We're going to take a break on Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addos, here with my co-host, Roger S. Sales from Argentina. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm here with Roger Sales. Roger's calling in from Argentina. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Melody didn't send me a special today, but yesterday she said the special would continue, that anyone who bought 2 tubes of Silver Eagles would get 1 free Silver Eagles, a free Silver Eagle. Or if you purchased 1 gold coin, you get a free Silver Eagle with every purchase. Give Melody a call, 1-800-375-4188, Discount Gold and Silver. Roger and I are talking about, in part, about the precarious condition of the world. Here's an article from the New York Times. The headline is Morsi, that's the president of Egypt, of course. Morsi faces ultimatum as allies speak of military coup. Cairo, Egypt entered a perilous 48 hours on Monday when the military delivered an ultimatum to the country's first democratically elected president. Hundreds of thousands of protesters renewed calls to oust him from office, and the president's Islamic allies vowed to take to the streets to stop what they called a military coup. What do you think? Roger?
Well, it's a very interesting thing, and it's happening all over. And I think that the price of gold that we've been talking about in the previous segment is absolutely intricately linked into all this stuff that's going over there. It's not only going on in Egypt, by the way. It's also going on in Turkey, as many of you know. And some of that's coming out. And there was a wonderful article in the Daily News. I saw it over on Drudge today. And it says, Turkish Deputy Prime Minister denies remarks on Jewish diaspora. Did you see this, Al?
No.
Okay. It says the assistant, what is he? He's the Turkish deputy prime minister. I can't, Adelay is his name. He had a press conference over there and saying, and let's see if I can get the quote. Anyway, he'd be flat. He says, there are some circles that are jealous of Turkey's growth. They are all uniting on one side, the Jewish diaspora. Cheyenne News Agency. Now, he's backpedaling from that about as quick as he can. That's the rest of the article, but that statement was made. And I don't think, you know, listen, in Roger's pasture, there aren't any sacred cows, all right? And I will call a spade in about a New York heartbeat. And you know where all this is coming from, and you know why it's being instigated, and you probably pretty well know how it's being instigated.
Well, let me clarify a little bit here for people who don't understand what you mean by the Jewish diaspora.
That was when the Jews were scattered. Okay.
Okay, and we're talking, and how is it that... And how is it that Turkey, for example, is uniting with others on their perspective?
Well, they've got instigators in there that are instigating these riots and this problem, is I believe what he's insinuating. I've heard other people come
You're saying that he's insinuating that there are Jewish agents, secret agents, whatever, that are instigating these riots in these foreign countries. True?
Sure, they do. Absolutely. You know the same thing's going on in Egypt. No. And anywhere else that they can cause confusion. You know, the game plan here is as old as Confucius, all right? Divide and conquer. Yep. That's the game plan. It's been around.
Same thing's happening to us. Same thing's happening in the United States.
Okay. When you know their playbook and you know what's going on, you can remove yourself from the equation. Okay.
Well, I don't know if you can remove yourself from the equation, but you can remove yourself from the confusion.
Yeah,
all right.
To some degree, I meant, you know, of your sanity, okay?
Yeah, I understand.
And understanding what's going on. And that's the battle is being fought in your minds, folks. And the more that you can draw the curtain back and have understanding in simplicity and look at this in conceptual methods, the more sane you'll be.
Well, I know that Egypt has been under Mubarak. I don't remember how long Mubarak was in office as president of Egypt, but probably close to 30 years. I'm not sure if that's true or false, but 20 for sure.
Him back. Yeah, they wanted him back, sure.
Well, he's occupying a cell, if I understand correctly. But where was my point? I lost. Oh, point. Mubarak was the focal point of whatever, and Egypt was the focal point of Middle East peace, right? So long as Egypt remained in a fairly peaceful relationship with Israel, the Middle East was not going to burst into flames. But once Mubarak disappeared, Israel had to regard Egypt as a threat rather than a kind of secret ally. And at that point in time, it would be astonishing if the Israelis did not say, look, we got to divide Egypt. Right? It'd be astonishing if they didn't do that. I mean, it's natural. They have to do it from the perspective of their own survival. It would be inevitable, but it can't be that hard to do because Egypt has so many problems in terms of overpopulation, inadequate food, inadequate production. Nothing. Where do you find a silver lining in the Egyptian cloud?
Boy, I don't know if there is one. But let's
there's not.
A little bit. There, you know, I used to tell people, say, if you hold your arms outstretched with your palms and you're looking like it's the world, and you go, man, this is really ugly, you know, and you step back a step and it gets bigger. Okay, so getting that perspective is important. This is an article I picked up again over the weekend, my lonely long weekend of being single, Al, like you're talking about, from Veterans Today, fairly respected source. Okay, and the title of the article is "History of the Theft of Palestine and the Jewish Invention of Modern Terrorism." It's a real good article, but I want to read just one little excerpt here. In the 20th century, it was the Jewish terrorist groups, the Irgun, led by future Prime Minister and Nobel Peace Prize winner Menachem Begin, and the Stern Gang, led by Yitzhak Shamir, another future Israeli Prime Minister, that introduced terrorism into Palestine, the Middle East, and Europe, and I would add the United States. He didn't put that on there, but it's certainly the vestiges of it. And this is a direct quote, okay? It says, "The IZL, the Irgun, and Stern groups inaugurated a reign of terror in the Palestine Jewish community. In the Jewish community, teachers were beaten up for speaking against them. Adults were shot for not letting their children join them. By gangster methods, beatings, window smashings, and widespread robberies, the terrorists intimidated the population and exacted a heavy tribute." Now, that's who's running the world, folks.
Well, you can argue, I mean, that's who's running the world, but that, and I don't deny what you're saying, but I would say that you'll see the same thing in the Muslim faith. There's something about the Middle East that drives people to where they are. There are a significant number that are prone to be violent extremists.
Well, let me ask you,
I know that violence is here everywhere. There's violence. I live in a little community. Violence is probably up here. I don't know that we see any, but you know, it's you're never free from it.
No,
but there's some people that seem to embrace it with a kind of fanaticism and enthusiasm that is hard for a lot of us to understand. And every time I won't say every time, but most of the time I see it, it comes out of the Middle East. And it comes out, the Jews are at it, the Muslims are at it. I think there's something in the sand over there.
No.
Maybe it's
not,
the too many fumes coming up from the petroleum products under the sea of sand that's made them all crazy. But
amigo, let's pin the tail on the donkey. Jews and Arabs lived over there for 2,000 years together till the Zionists came down there after Balfour and started stirring it up. Okay,
well, that may
be true. Tail on the donkey, buddy.
Yeah, that may be true. All right. So in any case, Egypt, we see, in my opinion, we've had a new president in there for right at a year. First democratically elected president. This was a year after the Arab Spring. All right, then Egypt, Mubarak overthrown. They have the first democratic elected president. Hooray, hooray. But there's no one. I don't care if you put Mubarak back in there. I don't think anyone can keep Egypt stable. If they can, it can only be at the point of a gun. You're going to have troops in the street, and they're just going to say, look, you're not going to come out. We're going to have curfews. You get to go to work. You come home from work. You mind your manners, or we'll gun you down in the streets. I don't think they can hold that country together. And what does that imply? We've got the Suez Canal going through Egypt. Is the Suez Canal in jeopardy? Does it have implications if Egypt goes up for grabs? What does it mean for the rest of the Middle East? What does it mean for the price of crude oil? What's it mean for the price of gold? What's it mean for the global economy?
In other words, if you go back and once again look at history, you know, one of the reasons I've been so successful with this, Al, is because the very first book I ever read turned me on to Sun Tzu. And I said, know your enemy. And I went, wow, that's a new thing. And so from that day to this day, I've gone and read everything with that in mind. All right. And what you look back on historically at World War One and Sarajevo and the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. And what that did was it triggered all these little small countries that were all intermarried with all these treaties and stuff. And it triggered these dominoes that put the Allies against the Entente. Okay. Or whatever it was called back then, but the German forces against the other forces, the French, et cetera, and it was all those treaties. Now they got to say they're trying to get Iran, they're going through Syria, and now they're going down here and messing with Egypt, and they're screwing with Turkey. Okay, those are all triggers. Those are trigger events that are sitting there waiting to happen to cover this financial mess where they've stolen all these trillions of dollars. Okay,
it's that's stealing trillions right of here. Dollars is like stealing monopoly money.
Well, I'll tell you.
All right, there's a point. It's like, you know, given that it can be inflated and the rest of that, I don't care how much, I don't care how many trillions of dollars you steal. If inflation catches up, it turns out you didn't steal a trillion, you stole a billion. And if inflation goes further, maybe you only got a couple million. And if inflation goes far enough, all you got is a stack of paper. It's like stealing Zimbabwean, you know, dollars. Who cares? The question is, what happened to the gold?
Well, and they've got control at that point, see? Now, shift that over to the U.S., because you're talking about this glass quivering. Look at the Trayvon Martin. But all's happening in that. All of the race stuff that's been building up. And then let me ask you a question. Why, 2-3 weeks ago, did they drag poor old Paula Deen there out of Brunswick, Georgia, and start thrashing her for something that happened 40 years ago? What was the purpose of that?
Well, bread and circuses, perhaps. I don't know. Put on a new act, draw your attention away from some of the other acts. Hard to say. It may be just some people. Who knows? You know, was there a purpose, or was this a story that just went viral?
Nope. They're lighting a fuse for race wars, buddy. This is wrapped into something that they're doing. This stuff doesn't just happen by accident. I know these creeps too well. I know how they work.
You know, there's things that happen. There are things that happen on the Internet that are so surprising. The most popular story I ever published on my blog was a cartoon that was, what was it? It was a weather report for the day after they expected. I don't remember. There was something that was supposed to happen 6 months ago, thereabouts, a year ago. There was some event that was being predicted, some planet or comet or something was going to hit the Earth. And they expect, it was a cartoon on the weekly weather report. And it showed that on the last day, the temperature would go up to 1,400 degrees and there'd be asteroids falling out of the sky and the rest of that sort of thing. It was just a silly little cartoon. But it turned out to be the single most popular article I'd ever published on my blog. On the one hand, I was glad to have people coming in. I'm glad to see the activity. On the other hand, it's a little bit embarrassing. I do other things that I think are important and interesting, and I get 1,000 people to look at, pay attention to what I've read, and here comes a silly little cartoon, and I don't remember. We had something like 20,000 people show up on my blog to look at the cartoon. Sometimes things just go viral, and I don't think it can be predicted. Nobody knows why. It just happens, and it strikes me as something like that's going on in the world right now. It's not just all under control. It's becoming strange.
It's
irrational.
Man. It's this 100 monkey theory type stuff. You know that story, don't you? You've heard that.
Yeah, I've heard it, but I don't remember it right off the top of my head.
Well, there's an island. I believe it's true, you know, that they found this little island over off Japan, somewhere over there in the Pacific, and it was full of monkeys. There weren't any people on it. And some scientists went over there, and they taught a pair of monkeys how to use tools. And the next time they came back, all the monkeys on the island were using the tools.
So that was a good thing. So they set up a hardware store so they could sell tools.
They might have.
Is that the moral of the story here?
No, the moral of the story was a Jewish monkey came up and he set up the hardware store.
All right.
And he bought low, buddy.
Let's talk a little bit about spying here. We've got a minute or so. Before a minute and 15 seconds before we take our next break, here's outrage in Europe grows over spying disclosures. And this is going to lead into what you'd like to talk about today. Anyway, we'll get to Edward Snowden here in a moment. But the headline, outrage in Europe grows over spying disclosures and damage from the disclosure of United States spying on its European and Asian allies. Spread on Monday, threatening negotiations on free trade agreement, hurting President Obama's standing in Europe, and raising basic questions of trust among nations that have been on friendly terms for generations. Does all this damn spying on the people of the United States also raise basic questions of trust concerning the people and the government of the United States? Should we take the problems? Europeans are upset that we're spying on them. How about Americans? Should Americans be equally upset that the government is spying on us? Get 20 seconds, Roger, to start with it, and we'll see where it goes.
Oh, no, in the words of Miss Alabama there, no, I like to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heck of a deal, man. And
it's just evidence of the government has gone too far. And the only
yes.
It's evidence that the Europeans have sense enough to be offended, and a lot of Americans don't. They don't understand the implication. The government doesn't trust you, me, or anybody else who lives in this country to make our own phone calls. They feel obligated to spy on us. It tells us that there has become a division between the government and the people. We are not working in harmony. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival here with Roger Sales. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent, co-host, guest. Depending on the day of the week and the letters in the particular month, he's one of the above, and we're discussing, among other things, when we started the break, we're talking about outrage in Europe grows over spying disclosures, and whether or not the American people have properly responded to those spying disclosures. Also, majority of Americans don't mind being spied on. About 53%. I think if we're catching terrorists, it's not such a bad deal. But a growing number. I would guess that back at 9/11, 2001, the number of Americans who would have agreed that spying on our phone calls was okay, I'll bet you it might have been as much as 90% in the aftermath of the 9/11 problem over 10 years ago. Today, the number is 53%. 53 is a majority, but I'll bet you it is a declining number. So
most Americans Americans are in a catatonic state. That's that information. We've covered it on shows that I got years ago from General Benton Parton on Freud's original experiments, and I think it explains exactly what's happening. And the more pressure people get under, I heard another guy, an expert on conditioning, say on a radio show, the more pressure that people get under, the deeper the conditioning takes effect and the harder it is to get rid of it. So I think that probably has something to do with what's going on. But, you know, earlier, Al, I meant to start out the program with this, and not that frivolity of all that other stuff, but it's kind of an important day to me in respect of one. It's an anniversary for me today. This is the five-year anniversary from the day I came into Argentina and the first time, and that's to live. And that's very significant for me. Through the highs and the lows of the 5 years I've been here, and there's been both. It's been a spectacular experience, and I wouldn't trade it or move back for anything. But what that came to me today that I wanted to talk about that I think is so important, because things come full circle. You know what I mean? We were talking a couple of weeks ago. We mentioned something about, you know, that graphic owl of the snake eating its tail.
That's got to be a hungry snake.
A hungry snake, right. Well, mm-hmm. That's what's happening. The snake's eating its tail. And what I mean by that is when they get strung out on all these agendas that they use for social engineering, and they always press the envelope, abortion, sodomite rights, whatever you want to, any of these areas, whatever they're going to do, they press the envelope. By the way, if you hadn't heard the third hour of Joyce Riley's show today with, the great internationally known Brian Tracy, get on there and tell his IRS experience, I encourage everybody listening to this to go over there and download Joyce's third hour today and listen to that guy's IRS horror story. He's a Jeff Snowden. That happened this morning, Al. You and I haven't talked about that. That's a heck of a show. But anyway, what I was going to say is that I got a revelation today, a certification of all these years of work. And, you know, years ago, Al, in John's great teacher, 20 years ago, this little unassuming portly guy would get up there and rip his shirt open. There's a big S painted on his chest, that kind of thing. Dynamic in person teacher. And one of the things he'd close especially the 30-hour weekend seminar with was Revelation 18. And that's one of the reasons that verse is so dear to me and I hold it so near, because it's always really provoked my interest and stimulated my imagination. And that part of the verse that says, Babylon, O Babylon the Great, has fallen in an hour. Okay, and I've often wondered over the years, you know, do you take that as a relative thing? You know, so people say God made the everything in 7 days was a day, 10,000 years, 100,000 years was it 24 hours? So there's a relativity there, and if you take that over to the Babylon the Great's fallen in an hour, is that relativity an hour there? Is it an hour like we know? What could cause that? What could cause that glass to break at the vibration point? And I'm telling you, man, I think we've got it, okay? Because we've got a situation where these people have put themselves in a corner, a big one.
And by these people, you mean who?
The people that run the world. And thanks to Jeff Snowden and their overreaction.
Jeff Snowden, now I understand his name to be Edward Snowden.
Okay, Edward Snowden, my bad. Okay, I just know Snowden, I should have just said. Miss Senior Snowden. With their overreaction, because evidently whatever he's got is real serious. Because I agree with what I've heard several commentators say is this. It's been known for a pretty long time that they were doing this stuff. It's no big revelation. What is it that he's got that is causing all this stuff, okay? Because there's something deeper than we're seeing on the surface, okay?
Well, he allegedly has more information that's been squirreled away with this half a dozen other individuals that they'll release it if he gives them the word. So he's not the only one retaining this information, but I guarantee you, I don't have it. So those of you that work for the CIA, Roger, I don't know about you, but if you don't have it, it wouldn't be a good idea to just, because they're looking for whoever else may have this information. I don't know how much more is out there, but the significance may be that Snowden, just as you say, the information's been available for a long time, but Snowden went viral. For some reason, And nobody knows why. It's like that Tunisian peddler who set himself on fire back in 2011 and precipitated the Arab Spring. All of a sudden, just bizarre things happen, and they take on significance way beyond what you might otherwise have expected.
How about the guy that started banging the pots and pans out in front of the Iceland Parliament?
Well, there's another one. Okay. You know, and there's a lesson here that you and I can start banging on some pots and pans. I'll have to get some pots and pans for our next program where
I'm
we can clang pots and pans together at this end, and you clang pots and pans together at the other end. And who knows, maybe we can start something.
Wait. I'm going to be Jewish hardware salesman. I got the pots and pans here.
All right. It's such a deal. Such a deal. Yeah, what kind of a deal can you give me on some pots and pans?
It's going to be free, the best deal.
This is evidence that on the one hand, the world is unstable. It's also evidence that those of you who are willing to stand up and try to do something, you just might succeed beyond anything you imagined.
Well,
you might decide you're going to have a little seminar. You might decide to have a little demonstration. And next thing you know, I'm not guaranteeing it's going to happen, but it can happen. It has to.
Well, many hands make light work.
Go ahead.
Many hands make light work, okay? And I've continually heard for 20 years that I've been in this rodeo here, this Patriot rodeo deal, and I keep hearing people go, I'm only one man. What can I do? No, well, you know what? I'm only one man. Look what the hell I've done. Al Addis's only one man. Look what he's done. Look what Ralph Winterroot's done. Look what all these people that have sacrificed so much have done. And it's the death of a thousand cuts is what it is. I heard Nancy Lord say that one time, and I liked it. It's the death of a thousand cuts. And that's
when a thousand different individuals stand up and just make a small difference.
Cumulatively, they make a difference. It's like Gulliver. One of those threads couldn't have tied him down, but thousands of them did, okay? And this is the snake eating itself, all right? And I'm reading on Drudge today, and I see this little creep named Wiener that's leading some gay deal, sodomite deal, with everybody hollering, Wiener, Wiener. And then, because they've pressed the gay agenda, the sodomite agenda, they've also pressed the feminist agenda. And on the other hand comes this other guy that's running against Wiener. His name is Joe Lotta, I guess, and he's calling on women and expose all of Wiener and go vote against him. So now they're getting the feminists on the whole feminism thing that they've done, and you can turn both of those against each other. All right? And see, that's the snake eating itself. And that's what I wanted to talk about today, because I got the idea that if we can carry this forward, and I wanted to put this out on your show today, Al, because, you know, this is the hours we spend together on the air are very special to me, and I think to you too, and I hope for our audience also, okay? But I think we got something, a real rare moment in time with the glass quivering and the octave getting clear, and they screwed up big time. As I heard somebody say, they messed up with a capital F, buddy. You know what they did? They revoked his slave passport.
They revoked Eric Snowden's passport.
Slave passport.
What does it mean to a man? I don't know where Eric Snowden is right now. Last I heard, he was in Hong Kong, and I believe he moved to Russia.
He's in the international area of the airport at Russia because his passport's been revoked. His slave passport, his federal passport, has been revoked, and he can't go to any countries because he can't leave the international area. But he hasn't applied for a passport as a U.S. national, which he's qualified to do if both of his parents were natural-born Americans, and the State Department cannot say no.
So now, that's an interesting argument, but what you're arguing, that if he were to use the strategy that you've advanced in your book to apply for a passport, if he were to use that strategy, the government would be compelled to grant him that passport.
Or else admit, why not, and blow the whole thing on the whole scam. They're in a corner. They put themselves in a corner. When I know this stuff, and you and I are on the air, and we got the audience and ears listening with the minds that are tuned into us, and he's got an option. He just doesn't know about it yet. So, you know, with 2 days away being the 4th of July, there ain't a whole hell of a lot to be happy about out there if you look at the scene on the surface. I want to give you a little hope. I want to put an idea in your mind, because the most powerful thing in the world is an idea. And you got them by the short hairs right here if we can spread it and get it media attention.
Free. That's always the question. Snowden. Can you make it go viral? Anyone who knows
Absolutely.
How to make things go viral, I mean, that's a gift. That's alchemy, practically. You got to be.
Al, you and I are going to be talking about this over the next couple of days. And next Tuesday, we're going to come out with some sort of a plan and make an announcement on next Tuesday's show. How about that?
Suits me. Speaking, here's an article on New York Times on Snowden. Asylum options narrow further for Snowden. Asylum options appeared to narrow further on Tuesday for Edward J. Snowden, the former National Security Agency contractor on the run from American authorities, as at least 9 countries reacted unfavorably to his request for sanctuary, and the Kremlin said he had withdrawn his application to Russia. I don't know. I mean,
Putin is telling him that he can stay in Russia, but he can't continue releasing documents.
Well,
that's
that
the ultimatum
right?
that Putin laid down. It's over on Drudge.
Now
if
that's
we can get this to his father, if we can get this information to his father and get this information to him through Julian Assange or whatever program we got to get on or who we got to get to that's got those copies of those things that he gave or whatever, we get this information to him, we'll blow this whole thing wide open, buddy. We're on an international stage now. We're on an international stage. They put themselves there. Throw me that softball. I'll knock that sucker right out of the park.
Well, regardless of what the truth is, the presumption that anybody is going to grant Edward Snowden a passport at this time, certainly anyone within this country,
they can't say no.
I mean, I don't care what happens. There are certain things that just aren't going to happen. I don't care if they're right or wrong.
But you see,
and it becomes irrelevant. There's so much political heat on this. I don't see that you're going to compel them to it.
If we can make that the issue, but then go back to the law of nations, they can't say no. It's his declaration. They tell you right there in the application. You can attach documentation. This is his choice. He just doesn't know he has it.
Yeah, I follow what you're saying. I don't doubt that Satan's situation. It can be amplified. It can be used. They've done something here. They're betting no one is going to know what to do about a man who's had his passport taken away. Now this is like one of those stories in a movie where you're trapped in an airport and you have to live there. I saw a cartoon based on that, or a comedy based on that, and I don't remember the name of it years ago, but this guy is getting up, he sleeps in chairs, and he gets up, and he goes and washes off in the bathroom, and he's just trapped in the airport for, who knows, weeks. Snowden appears to be in that circumstance. Something's going to come out of this, but I am surprised to see that Putin is essentially backing the United States in trying to keep these, whatever secrets Snowden still has, trying to keep those.
Said, his quote was he didn't want to harm his American partners. That was his quote. Paraphrase.
Well, I hate to hear that because Putin was one of the people who was at least standing up trying to do what was right for Russia. Not that I always agree with Putin, but at least
Putin's
seemed to be honest.
Putin's a cagey politic and a KGB guy.
I understand. He's a pragmatist. He's a pragmatist, but we are out of time, Roger, and we're going to have to leave the pragmatics of this for another time. I'm Alfred Addis. I want to thank all of you folks for listening. We will be back. I'll be back tomorrow with Melody Cederstrom. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Roger, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
me.